Good morning, Rabosai. I guess this morning is a bit of a first in the tradition of this shiur, in that this is the first time I took the liberty to change the topic on Motzei Shabbos. I was planning on speaking on the Gemara in Maseches Brachos, which discusses, there is, in case you were wondering about the topic about mentioning Bilam and Kriyashma, there is such the Gemara at the end of the first parak of Brachos discusses the fact that the Chachamim had a Havamina to put in the Parshas Bilam, a specific Pasuk, was what they were interested in, and the reason why they didn't do it was because of Tircha de Tzibura, and the discussion that follows is what I had thought about speaking about, but I realized over Shabbos that this wasn't, I wasn't going to be able to pull it together in time. So we switched at the last minute, or as Rav Harvey says, I had to cook something up at the last minute. So I decided to speak about a topic which is also relevant to Parshas Balak, and that is the topic of Bishul Nachri, the topic of the cooking done by a guy. How is this relevant to Parshas Balak? So the truth of the matter is it's relevant both to Parshas Chukas and Balak. Because for the Svardim here, so the Ben Ish Chai in Parshas Chukas gets off in a very interesting discussion, a mystical discussion. We find towards the end of the Parsha that the Kohal Yisrael said a Shira, they said praises after Hashem performed a great miracle for them by the Nachalei Arnon, by the mountains of Arnon. And among the praises that they said was Be'ercha Farua Sarim Karua Nadiveyam. This is a reference to the Be'er that had given them water. It said this was a Be'er that was dug by the prestigious people. And the Ben Ish Chai, without going into it in depth, but the Ben Ish Chai goes into a mystical discussion about how all the Jewish souls come from the same source. All the neshamas of Klal Yisrael come from a source which is called Be'er. And the Goyim, the Umus HaOlam, come from a different source, and therefore he gets into a whole discussion that therefore there is a stiff prohibition against intermarriage between Jews and Goyim, and to that end, the Chachamim made certain gzeros in order to prevent the intermarriage of Jews and Goyim. The Chachamim made certain gzeros, certain decrees, and included in them, we spoke earlier in the year about Pas Akum, about the bread baked by a guy. So another one that they made was Bishul Akum, the food cooked by a guy. So that's the connection to Parshas Chukas. There is also a connection to Parshas Balak, which is here on the sheet, because the Chazal tell us in the Medrash that we find at the very end of Parshas Balak the terrible tragedy that took place when the Jewish people were involved in acts of immorality with the Benos Moab, that they were Mazana with the Benos Moab. And the question comes about, how exactly did this transpire? How did the Benos Moab get the Jews to do such a terrible thing? So it says that they came up, the Medrash says that they came up with a whole scheme in which they had stores, and they had an older woman working at the outside of the store and a younger woman on the inside. And it says that the Jews would come by and be, browsing at what the goyim were selling. And they would be invited into the store, at which point they would encounter the younger woman who was all dressed up. And it says that this younger woman would offer the Jew wine to drink. While he was there, she would offer him a drink of wine. And because they accepted the wine and they began to drink, so they became lightheaded, and that led to acts of immorality. And in the midst of this medrash, we find that it's at length here on this sheet. But if you look at a specific point, it says about three or four lines before it gets wide, it says, Miyad Mashkeu Hayayin, so she would give him wine to drink, Uborbo, right? And then already that brought down the person's guard, and that led to all kinds of problems. So the problem was caused by wine. Earlier in this piece in the Medrash, about 12 lines from the top, it says, Va'adayin lo nesar yayin shel goyim, that the reason why this happened was because at that point in history of the Klal Yisrael, the wine of a non-Jew was not usher. In other words, the attribution, the blame for the terrible sin that took place at the end of Parshas Balak was because of the fact Jews were allowed to drink at that point non-Jewish wine. Because min haTorah, wine is wine. What's the difference? The wine is kosher, it comes from grapes. Assuming there's nothing else added, you could drink the wine of a guy also. The reason why we don't drink it, the reason why we have very strict prohibitions against drinking it, is precisely because of this type of thing, because it leads to socialization between Jews and Goyim, which could lead to intermarriage and other problems, and that's what we find here in this Chazal. So along the list of gzeros that the Chachamim made, in terms of things that we have to do to stay away from potential intermarriage of Goyim. So we find the Mishnah here, it's on the second sheet, on the first sheet, side B. We had this Mishnah earlier in the year. The Mishnah says, Ve'elu dvarim shalot ekochavim asurin. These are the following things are from a Goy that are asur. Ve'en yisurim isur hana. The prohibition is not an isur hana. And the Mishnah lists off. The first thing is milk, which was milk of, let's say, a cow, a kosher animal, which was milked by a guy without a Jew watching, which is what we call the issue of Chol of Yisrael. Maybe a different time we could speak about that. Then it says Vehapas, and also the bread of a guy that we spoke about. And then if you skip down a line, the Mishnah says at the end of the next line, the Mishnah says v'hashlokos. Shlokos means cooked. It's unclear exactly what it means, but what the Chazal are referring to is shlokos means cooked food. Cooked food something that a guy cooked. If you look at Rashi v'hashlokos says kol davar shebishlu ovi kochavim. Any food that was cooked by a guy. Even if it was cooked in a kosher vessel. In other words, by us today, we would say that of course you can't eat the food cooked by a guy. Because first of all, who says it's kosher? Right? Who knows what he put in there? Number one. Number two, even if you'll say that you saw that he only put in kosher ingredients, but who says that the pot that he used was a kosher pot? It could be that he used a pot which a few hours ago he cooked some pork in, right? So therefore that would be a second problem. But the Mishnah here, so therefore we would naturally not eat something cooked by a guy. But the Mishnah here is saying that even if you knew it was kosher ingredients, and even if you knew that it was cooked in a kosher pot, for example, you gave him your pot, right? You gave the guy your pot to use. Nevertheless, the Chachamim prohibited food that is cooked by a guy. And the reason why, you'll say, why would they do that? What's the problem? The food is kosher, the pot is kosher, what's the problem? So says Rashi, the problem is Mishum Chasnus. The reason for this prohibition is because of Chasnus. Chasnus means, plain and simple, because it could lead to the possibility of intermarriage. Which we spoke about when we spoke about Pas Akum versus Pas Yisrael. So here again, the Chachamim were very concerned about people eating together because a very basic form of people getting to know each other and socializing is through food, is through dining. And therefore, if you're going to allow a guy to cook, so then you'll come to eat with him. Right? And the end result will be, you know, he has a son and you have a daughter or vice versa, and before you know it, you could have this problem. And this is akin to the problem that, along the lines of the problem that existed in the end of Parshas Balak, the idea of the problem that the Jews had with the Menos Moab. So therefore, the Chachamim came and prohibited all of this. And therefore, this brings us to the topic, the issue of Bishul Akum, food which is cooked by a guy. So again, just to get it clear, it has nothing to do with the food not being kosher. It has nothing to do with the pot not being kosher. Even if it was 100% kosher, v'yosher, he used your pot and you gave him all the ingredients, and all he did was cook it himself, that alone would be a problem. Now, this obviously presents a great challenge to us, especially in the modern world. You know, it used to be that it wasn't such a big deal, perhaps, because, all right, it just meant that a Jew couldn't eat in a guy's house. But like I say, you know, very often it may have been a moot point anyway, because you couldn't eat there anyway, because he's going to serve you things which aren't kosher. In many tkufos, in many periods in the history of the Jewish people, Jews were not welcome amongst goyim. So therefore, the issue may not have been such a great issue. But in our times, it has come up to be a very, very major issue. And that is because of the fact that one goes to Publix, and you could purchase there items which are pre-cooked. For example, just to take two simple examples, and don't jump on me for saying this, because we have to get to the bottom of it, but if one were to buy a bag of potato chips, right, so Wise potato chips, or Lay's, or any other, not playing favorites, any other company, so that type of thing would be, that is cooked by a guy, right, it's potatoes that were fried. Right, the Isser of Bishel is not only by Bishel per se, it's not only if it was cooked in water, but even if it was fried, would also be other forms of cooking. So potato chips, right? We don't assume that Mr. Wise, you know, maybe his name was Weiss, you know, and they Americanized it, you know, but by Lay's, I don't know how you're gonna make a Jewish name out of that, right? So we don't assume that there is some Jew there who's standing there, they have some Yiddler that's standing there and cooking for them, right? And so too, you know, a simple item like Heinz baked beans, right? Which we buy all the time, right? Again, who is that? So this is cooked completely by goyim in a plant, and it's cooked, it's pre-cooked. So when we buy it, so it's already been cooked. So now the question is, how are we allowed to eat it according to this iser? And this halacha is in the Shulchan Aruch, right? This is what, not all the gzeiros that the Chachamim made originally made it to our time, but this one did. The question of Bishul Akum and so forth is something which is in the halacha. So how exactly do we come to terms with all of this? So the basic justification for all of this is found in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. There's a major qualification to this halacha that's found in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah on Daf Lamed Hey Amid Aleph, okay, which is on the sheet here. And the Gemara says as follows. The Gemara says, Amar Rav it's not Daf Lamed Chesam Aleph. The Gemara says on the top line, the Gemara says, Amar Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak, it's on the second sheet, side one. I underlined the beginnings point of the Gemara. Amar Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak, Amar Rav, Kol Hanechal Kamos Shehu Chai, Ein Bo Mishum Bishulei Ove Kochavim. Anything that could be eaten the way it is, raw, does not have an issue of Bishul Ove Kochavim. Which means anything, any food that you have that you could eat raw, even if it was cooked. So for example, a baked apple would not be a problem of bishulei ove kochavim, simply because you can eat an apple raw. And even though you will say, yeah, that's true, but a baked apple tastes better to me than a raw apple does, nevertheless, the Chachamim allowed this. This is something the Chachamim allowed, and I believe the Svara, the reason for this is, because in such a situation, psychologically, you know, part of the problem when you eat by somebody's house, you know, the reason why it would lead to a possibility of chasnus, of intermarriage, is because when you're eating someone, it's not just that you're eating together, but when you're eating someone else's food, so you feel to a certain degree indebted to them, because after all, they served you such a nice meal. But something that could be eaten raw, so we don't have that, because you don't have that feeling of appreciation. I didn't need him for this. You know, the fact that I could have had this without him. So therefore, this is the first big leniency that we have in the law of Bishul Akum. That anything that could be eaten raw would be allowed, even if the guy cooked it for you. So like I said, we could all think of examples. An apple is something that jumps out, but also something like water, which is where I'm headed with this, right? Something like water, which if a guy cooked water for you, right, let's say you wanted hot water, okay, so in that situation, since you could drink the water cold, you could drink the water without him cooking it. So therefore, this is considered nechol chai. It could be eaten raw, it could be eaten in its natural state, or it could be consumed in its natural state, and therefore there is no problem even if the guy cooks it for you, even if the guy's cooking enhances it. Okay, that is Kula number one.
Yeah, where would you put eggs?
What, eggs? I don't know. Where would you put eggs? Yeah. Where he drank the raw eggs. Yeah, I was in high school then. Yeah, so. Right. And I heard about it. Right. So, but I don't know. I mean, Yossel Rosenblatt, they say, also used to drink raw eggs before he got up to daven for the Amid. Right, Chazanim would do that. But what's that? That's right. Okay. I don't know if you could bring riots from such things. Correct. I don't know. Eggs would probably. It would probably be on the other side, right? So that's what I would assume. It is interesting that I saw that Rabbi Menachem Ganak, from the head of the kashrus of the OU, made the claim, or at least considered the possibility, that fish, because today people eat sushi, and it's a common thing, that therefore one could make the case that fish would be considered something which is nechel chai. I don't know if he ends up Lemaisa with that, but I know that he was considering that at one point. So anyway, that's the first kula. But that kula doesn't get us potato chips, right? Because we don't eat potatoes raw, and it probably doesn't get us baked beans either, right? We don't eat the beans raw either. So far we don't have a heter for that. But the Gemara continues a few lines down. And the Gemara says, "Bepumpedisa." Three lines later, "Bepumpedisa masnu hachi." Amar Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchok Amar Rav, "Kol she'eino nechal al shulchan melachim lelafes boes hapas ein bo mishum bishulei of the kachavim." The Gemara says that any food item which would not be served al shulchan melachim. Now, al shulchan melachim literally means on the table of kings. So if it would not be served on the table of kings, l'lafis bo'sapas, if it would not be served as a dish that people consume as part of a main meal, if it would not be served to a king, that also does not constitute bishul atum. That also would not go into the prohibition of bishul nachrim. And again, the reason for this apparently is because if it's not something which is prestigious, if it's a food which is not, al shulchan melachim means that, simply stated, means that the food is chashuv, that the food is an important food, right? You would serve it to a king. However, if it's something, let's say candy, okay, so that's not the type of thing that is al shulchan melachim. It's also not something which is lelafis boas apas. It's not something that you would eat as part of a meal, as a main dish. So therefore, those things are out. Those things are removed from the Isser of Bishul Akum. So this gives us the second leniency that we have, and this one is the one that helps us more. Right? This leniency of Eino Olal Shulchan Melachim gets us a lot more foods. That would, in effect, probably explain the potato chips, right, and the beans. Because the fact is that neither of those things, even though they are things that we readily consume, right? They have very large markets, but nevertheless, it's not prestigious. It's not prestigious. I saw that the interesting thing that in the Star K, they have a booklet that they put out called Kashrus Current. So I saved them over the years. They had one from about 10 years ago. I dug it up late last night, where they actually called the chef in the White House back in 10 years ago, and they asked him at state dinners, "Do you ever serve potato chips?" And they said we are not against it. Bishita. In other words, if the that's exactly the way the guy said it, right? Now, the person said that if the guest was interested in potato chips, we would serve it. However, as a practical matter, in the history of the White House, it's never been done. That's what they said, right? So therefore, that would probably be a good enough heter to take care of the potato chips. As well, that would also take care of the baked beans, because this is a davar yadua that at any prestigious meal they will never serve vegetables out of a can, right? That also they asked him. He said, "We never ever would serve canned vegetables, right? Everything they serve is fresh." So therefore, all the canned vegetables would be mutter on this heter, right? Because of the fact that it's eino olal shulchan malachim. It does not. It would not be served. It would not be served in a prestigious situation. So this is in fact what we find here in the Shulchan Aruch page 2, side B. Right, the very first halacha is that it says davar she'eino ne'achal chai. Any food which cannot be eaten raw, he's putting it in the Isser state. It cannot be eaten raw. The gam olal shulchan malachim ulafis boaz apas. So olal parperish bishul v'kachavim. He says osur mishum bishul v'kachavim. So in order for it to be osur, so this is what we have to remember. In order for food to be prohibited on the guise of Vishal Akum, it has to meet two criteria. Number one, it cannot be eaten raw, or if it's a liquid, it cannot be, you cannot drink it uncooked. Right? If you could drink it uncooked, it's mutter, so therefore if a guy cooked you milk, hot milk, that would also be okay. Alright? But anything that you could drink raw or eat raw is no problem. That's number one. And number two is, even if it's not in that category, such as potatoes, right, which cannot be eaten raw, nevertheless, if it's not olal shulchan malachim, if it's not the type of thing that would be served in a prestigious situation, so therefore that would also not be a problem. So you need, in order for it to be osur, it has to be both. It has to be that it's not eaten raw, and it would be served in an important situation. If it's missing even one of them, then it's mutter. So that really, if you think about it, would cover a lot of what we buy in the stores. In other words, all the canned goods, all the canned vegetables, even if they were pre-cooked, I imagine they probably were, right? Even the corn or whatever, peas, such things like that, have all been cooked previously. But there's no problem because those things are not olal shulchan malachim. Some of them could possibly be ne'achol chai. I don't know. You go through all the vegetables that they sell. Some of them could be that you could eat them raw. But this is the way it breaks down. So this is the basic rule of Bishul of Chachavim. Now, just you should know that this is a very broad topic and it's impossible to cover it in one session. But as far as the exact definition of olal shulchan malachim, there are amongst the poskim, not everybody agrees that the definition that it has to be served at a state dinner. There were those who argued that olal shulchan malachim just means that a distinguished person would eat it. Right? A distinguished person would eat it, which would mean that a person, let's say, or a person who had a lot of at his disposal would eat it. So therefore, it is quite possible that behind closed doors, Barack Obama would eat Heinz baked beans, right? Or would eat Wise potato chips. Right, so there were those who said, they say the Chaznish held this, that as long as a person who was held to be an Adam Chashev would eat it, that already would make it olal shulchan malachim, which would be a very big problem for us. But nevertheless, the consensus of the poskim, especially in our time, hold that olal shulchan malachim means that it would be served at a state dinner. That's what it comes down to. If it will be served at a state dinner, then it's olal shulchan malachim, and if not, not. And for this we rely on heterim. Okay. What? If it's even a side dish, yes, a side. Yes, so the halach is side. Yeah, that's what the Shulchan Aruch says. If you, the Gemara, I didn't really want to focus on that, but if you, the Gemara uses the expression "malafis boas hapas," which would sound that it's only if it's a main dish. But the maskon of the Gemara, the maskon of the poskim is that it says even parperes, right? Even parperes, which is in the Shulchan Aruch, even if it was a side dish, that would be also usher. So therefore, yeah, that alone would not be a justification. But other things, candy, right? All candy is mutter on this basis. Cereals, many of them are certainly the sugar cereals and the stuff that, you know, the geared to kids and, you know, people who are kids at heart, right? That stuff is surely not olal shulchan malachim. So even if it was cooked, it would be mutter. Okay, yeah, sir.
Yes. Is this indicative that they really was more socialization going on with non-Jews, because if the basis is that this leads to socialization,
so why would they allow this? So I'll tell you, it's an interesting point. So, see, here there is a difference between the halacha of Bishul and the halacha of Pas, because you may recall that when we spoke about the law of Pas Akum, so there the court, we mentioned that the Rishonim all say that the gzera that the Rabbanan made not to eat a guy's bread was a very, very difficult gzera to go by, because you need bread to live. It's the most basic food. Certainly in the old times, it was until very recently, that was the most basic staple of a person's meal. So therefore, the Chachamim made a kula, which was called the Pas Palter. You may recall, Pas Palter means that if it was baked commercially, because there they said that the whole issue is that you'll come to intermarry. So you only get intermarry if it's on a personal basis. But if you go into a commercial bakery where he's just trying to do business, he's not interested in you or your family, he's just selling you the bread, he just wants his money, so then the Chachamim allowed for a kula. Now this kula does not exist. This kula does not exist by Bishul. Okay, so we don't have such a heter because of the fact that by Bishul it's not the same problem. You could cook the food yourself. The desperation angle is not as great as it is by Pas. So we don't have that kula. At the same time, I guess, I don't know, it could be the reason why they allowed it is just misvara. In other words, I don't know if it's viewed as a kula per se. In other words, I don't think that there's such an inyan here to be machmir. This is the din. This is what it says in the Gemara. I think it's because logically they felt that there would be no psychological indebtedness to such a person. That's what I think. Now, just before we go further, as far as what's called Olal Shulchan Malachim, it really does change. It really could change. We find in Poskim that there were things that at one time were not considered Olal Shulchan Malachim that at other times were, and it's very subjective. It's very, very subjective. There are a lot of foods. It's very hard to judge what's Olal Shulchan Malachim and what's not. But the minhag ha'olam that we are lenient in a lot of these areas certainly is because we say that these types of foods, like I say, canned vegetables, candy, many cereals, things like that, it's certainly not Olal Shulchan Malachim. Now, the question that I wanted to get at is a question that I'm sure everybody would consider at one point or another, and that is Starbucks, right? You want to go in, or Krispy Kreme. Right, now you may have noticed that the coffee served at this shir has changed over the period that we've been having the shir. So initially we were bringing in the Krispy Kreme coffee, and then we changed to home cooked coffee. And, you know, lest one think that this was because of economic reasons, I would like to suggest that maybe there's a halakhic reason. Because we have to ask ourselves, so what exactly is the heter to go into a store, go into any place where they sell coffee, and buy a cup of coffee? Let us consider, right, the two heterim, right, the two leniencies in Bishul Akum. Number one, it does not apply if it could be eaten raw. Okay, coffee cannot be eaten raw. You can't drink coffee raw, right? The coffee beans, it has to be cooked. Right, nobody eats coffee beans. Number one. Number two, it has to be Eino Olal Shulchan Malachim. They serve coffee at all the state dinners, right? The most prestigious people. Now, they may not serve Publix coffee, right? But maybe they don't even serve Maxwell House coffee. But the fact of the matter is that coffee as an entity is served. So the question is, how exactly is this allowed? Right? How exactly is this allowed? This is something that I wanted to touch on. Right? In other words, why is it? Now, in general, as far as not getting into the discussion of buying coffee, many of us are, would feel comfortable, buying a cup of coffee in a regular store. Right? We know that flavored coffees present a possible question in kashrus, but unflavored regular coffee, so it's all kosher. Plain coffee is kosher. So the question is, if it was cooked by a guy, so what do we say? What is our answer for that? Right? So that's one question that's the question I wanted to address, which is the question, I guess, that would apply by Krispy Kreme. Right? Interestingly enough, there was somebody who raised a little bit of a question about the donuts there also. Now we're going to totally, be motzi lies about the food served there, right? Because the donuts, see, there is a question, how do you eat Krispy Kreme's donuts? They don't have a Jew cooking for them, right? They don't even have a Jew lighting the oven for them, as far as I know. They don't claim it to be any sort of Bishul Yisrael, right? So how do we eat it? So you'll tell me, well, that's simple. Donuts are simple because donuts would fall under the heter of pas, right? Because like a bakery. So that, right, baked goods are considered pas, and by pas already we have a heter of palter, that if it was cooked, if it was baked commercially, it's mutter. However, this is not so simple because not in the poskim, there are numerous poskim who say that things which are fried are not considered pas. That things which are fried, there is passes if it's baked, but if it's fried, it would be considered bishul. And if it's bishul, we don't have the heter of palter, right? So how then can we even go into Krispy Kreme and eat their donuts? So the answer to that is, the widely accepted answer to that is, that it's eino olal shulchan melachim. Because certainly their donuts, right, are eino olal shulchan melachim. The belief is that donuts would not be served at a state dinner, right? Donuts are not choshev. They don't, right? They may serve fancy pie, but they would not serve to the Prime Minister of England if he came on his official state visit. They would not say, here, we just stopped off in Dunkin' Donuts, here are some donuts. Right? So therefore it would come out that even if you will say that donuts are bishul, but it's considered ein olal shulchan melachim. A while back there was a Rav who was challenging that assumption, but I believe that the accepted practice, undoubtedly, accepted practice is that the donuts would be mutter, even if you consider it pas, so then you're covered by the fact that it's palter. And if you consider it bishul, so it's ein olal shulchan melachim. But coffee, what are we going to say about coffee? So the truth of the matter is that this has been a hotly debated subject. All right, too early in the morning for that. Right? A hotly debated topic, which is found in the Pisrei Tshuva. This is on the third sheet, side one, in the Pisrei Tshuva and Yeridei Simen Kuf Yudalad, which interestingly enough is not the simen that speaks about Bishul Akum. It's the next one. But for some reason, it came up over here, and he brings down from the Ma'arit that the discussion also came about with beer. Now I don't know exactly the process of making beer, so I'm going to stick to coffee. But apparently at one point, I don't think today the beer is cooked. They cook the grains. So the question is, how are you allowed to drink beer? Right? You would have the same question. Now, beer also would fit both of these criteria, right? Because of the fact that what makes the beer, right? The water of the beer obviously is nech ochai, can be consumed without cooking, but what makes it beer are the hops and the grains that they put in there, right? So that has to be cooked. And beer is also olal shulchan melachim, right? Beer is they have today very expensive, right? They are all very, very good quality beers that they commonly serve in these types of events. So the discussion comes about, how is all of this mutter? So he brings down here in the Pisrei Tshuva that there were osrim, that there were people who said that you couldn't do it. But the basis for the heter is what I would like to discuss first because it has certain ramifications. The basis for the heter, really the issue that's going to be by beer and by coffee, is it considered water or is it considered, in other words, do we consider coffee or do we consider coffee flavored water? Okay, now, if you consider coffee as an entity in itself, we would certainly have a problem. The basis for the heter to drink coffee is because we do not consider coffee when we look at coffee, we see the water in the coffee. And this is based on a Tosfos that's found in the Sefer Avodah Zarah, which is on the final sheet, page 3, side B. And that is that the Gemara here discusses, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah discusses, apparently there was a time that the Chachamim actually made a direct zera on drinking the beer of a goy. that gzera did not make it to hard times. Even in the Gemara, it seems like the Maskana of the Gemara, they didn't hold by it. But there was a point that people made a gzera not to drink the beer of a guy. So we have the Tosus here, the second to the last Tosus on the bottom of the page, right? So Tosus, the Dibra Masa v'Tervayu, at the very end of this Tosus on the right hand side, so he discusses what then, so if today we don't have the gzeira on beer directly, but still, why don't we have the problem of dishal aklam? Why don't we have this problem? So he says the following thing. So he says two explanations. The first explanation that he says is because of the fact that the beer that they used to make was not olal shulchan melachim. Right? He says the three lines from the end of the Tosfos, that the beer was not good quality, the old time beer, or at least the beer that they had in the times of the Gemara Rishonim, was not such good quality, and therefore it was not considered olal shulchan melachim, and on that basis it would be mutter for, like we saw. However, that would not apply to us, and that would also not apply to coffee. Right? So Tosfos continues and says, the final explanation, he says two lines before the end, he says, Va'od yesh tam acher lahatir ha-sheichar. He says, there is another way that we could permit beer, de'en bo mishum bishuli nachrim. He says, d'chi hechi da'atfua b'teilo l'gabe ha-mayim v'inyin birchas sha'kol niya b'dvaro. So just like when it comes to the bracha, what bracha do you say on beer? So on the bracha on beer, we say shakol ni'ebidvar, like we would say on water, right? We don't pay attention to the fact that there are grains in the beer, right? That there are things in there. This is not water, right? This is water that has been that has the result of a process that was mixed together with grains. Yet the bracha we say is shakol ni'ebidvar. Says Tosfos, Hachinami hi b'teilo le'inyan iser bishul. So too, just like when it comes to the bracha that we say the fact that it has grains in it is no problem because we view it as water. So too, says Tosfos, when it comes to the question of bishul, we see it as water and we don't see the grains. We view it that the grains are bottled to the water. A remarkable chiddush, which is really hard to come to terms with, but nevertheless, this is what he wants to say, that there's a bittul, that just like when it comes to the bracha, the grain properties are considered nullified, that's not considered primary, so too, when it comes to bishul, it's not considered primary, and therefore, he says the beer would be mutter. If this is true, so then this would be, so the Pri Chodesh in his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch said that if we will accept this explanation of Tosfos, then we could say that this is why coffee would be permitted as well. Because even though coffee is the product of cooking the coffee beans, but nevertheless, when we look at coffee, we see the water. We don't say the bracha on coffee, bari priyates, right? Even though the coffee is completely reflecting the coffee beans, right? The whole taste, everything you have there, it's in liquid form. But the fact of the matter is that it's completely the taste of coffee. Nevertheless, when it comes to the bracha, we say shakol. So too says the Pri Chodesh that we would say when it comes to the question of bishul, that also we would say the bracha shakol, that also we would say that it does not have the property of coffee. It's not viewed as coffee, it's viewed as water. And since water is a davar shenecho chai, right, since water can be eaten in raw in its natural state, so therefore there is no problem of bishulei nachrim. This is the heter that was put forth by the Pri Chodesh. Now, this heter was challenged. This heter was challenged over the years. There were people who did, even in modern times, there were people who strongly disagreed with the analogy. One could see even a contemporary posek in the Sefer Shevet HaLevi, Rav Vosner in Eretz Yisrael, who disagrees very strongly with the, he says there's two different reasons, the bracha has no bearing on this. But nevertheless, this heter made it into the mainstream of the Klal Yisrael. The Aruch HaShulchan, I believe, also refers to this. So this would be many poskim. There are other reasons given. The truth is, this is not the only reason. There are other reasons. Each individual reason on its own could be debatable. But nevertheless, the minig ha'olam, the minig of Klal Yisrael, is that people we don't make a problem when we don't have problems drinking the goy of a non-Jew. Again, assuming it's all kosher and all that. But as far as bishul nachrim, we don't have this problem. Now, I just want to conclude by saying that the ramifications of this, of viewing coffee as water, so it's an interesting thing. That if you view coffee as water, so, or even beer as water, right, so there's a halacha, there are several halachas that this could potentially impact on, but yet we'll see that we don't necessarily say we view it as water. For example, there is a question when it comes to making Kiddush, right, making Kiddush Shabbos morning or making Havdalah, what happens if you don't have wine? So if you don't have wine, we say that you could make Havdalah or you could make Kiddush Shabbos morning on what's called Chamar Medina. Chamar Medina means that any drink that is, the exact definition is unclear, but something that is widely accepted in the place that you live as a prestigious drink. So Chamar Medina you could say in the place of wine. Of course, you would not say the Bracha Bar Pri HaGafen in such a case. But this is why people Shabbos morning commonly make Kiddush on schnapps, right? They make Kiddush on scotch or vodka, things like that, right? What's that? Yeah, right. That's a different discussion, right? That how much you have to drink. But people commonly make Kiddush on that. Theoretically, a person could make Havdalah or Kiddush Shabbos morning on beer. Or, what happens if you don't have any of those things? So the poskim say, contemporary poskim say that you could, even it's brought in Sfarim, that you could make Havdalah on tea and coffee. Right? Because tea and coffee is considered Chamar Medina. So it's just interesting that we consider it water when it comes to Bishul Akum. Now nobody would say in their right mind that you could say Havdalah on water. Right? It does not exist, right? There is a debate amongst contemporary poskim whether soda is acceptable. There's a lot of talk about that, whether a person could use soda. But tea, coffee, beer, no question. Right? So it's just an interesting thing to note that when it comes to this, we view it as a drink. Right? We very much pay attention to the qualities of the beer that's in it. Yet when it comes to the question of the bishul, we say, this is just water that's flavored. Right? So, just an interesting thing. You could be machalic. I don't think it's difficult to draw a distinction between the two halachas. But that's one area where it may impact elsewhere. And also, in terms of drinking before davening. So we know there's a halacha in the Shulchan Aruch, then in the Gemara, a person's not allowed to eat before you daven shachris in the morning. Right? So now the question is, so what about if you want to take a drink of water? So clearly, it's mentioned lehetta that you could drink water. The poskim say that a person could also drink a cup of coffee before davening. A person could have. There is a question whether you could put in sugar, that the Mishnah Berurah is machmir, a person should not put in sugar, but clearly a cup of coffee you could have. So there, one could say that perhaps that does reflect this mentality, that after all, you know, the heter is because it's just water anyway, you know, it's just water with some flavoring in it, so therefore it would be mutter. Of course, you'll say to me that if that's true, then you should be able to have a beer before davening, and that nobody holds up. So, all right, for many reasons. But nevertheless, this is the heter. This is the heter for coffee. So therefore, I guess we now when we reflect back on the food service here at the Shir, we would have to say that one of two possibilities. We have to be down with kafskos. Either it could be that we have changed to this coffee because we want to be machmir, right? Because not everyone agrees with this heter. The minig Yisrael, the common practice is that we're all lenient to drink the coffee cooked by goyim, but to stay out of a machlokas, it's always better if you make it yourself. Right, so therefore, all things being equal, I'm not suggesting that you shouldn't go drink coffee in other establishments, but clearly there would be an advantage to making it yourself, right? So you have that possibility. On the other hand, the minig Yisrael is to be makel. Before we finish, I just want to mention one other thing. As I say, this topic is very, very broad, and there are a lot of questions that come up today in terms of people at housekeepers, and we live in a world where women work, which was not the case, certainly in the time of the Chazal, and even until very recently, you didn't have such a prevalence of women working, and as a result, today there are many, many shilohs that come up in a person's own home because you have a housekeeper or a babysitter or whatever who you ask to cook food, right? And that could be a question. That could be a question of bishalachim. In other words, we have to realize that a certain awareness there has to be because of the fact that you know, again, it has nothing to do with the food not being kosher. It has nothing to do with the pots not being kosher. If a guy comes into your house and cooks with your ingredients and your pots, but he cooked the food or she cooked the food, you can't eat it, right? The food of bishalachim you cannot eat. So what do we rely on for that? So again, this is a much bigger question, but the heter that is commonly relied upon is, or at least used to be relied upon until the technology changed, is that ovens had pilot lights, and therefore we find in the halachas of bishalachim that if a Jew just simply throws food into the fire, then throws some fuel into the fire, that's enough, even though the guy put the pot onto the flame. But as long as a Jew contributed to the fire, that would be considered good enough. I just want to point out that halacha is only true by Ashkenazim. By Sfardim, that halacha is not so. That if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, in the same siman, I don't have it on the sheet, but there is, we find this in the Shulchan Aruch, that the question is, in Sif Zion, Siman Kuf Yud Gimel, Sif Zion, so the Mechaber of the Shulchan Aruch, Rabbi Yosef Karo, who is the posik that the Sfarim follow, says that throwing fuel into the fire does not help. It does not help. It only helps by bread. That would be a heter for pas akum. But when it comes to bishul, it does not help. And therefore, according to Sfarda custom, the only way to get around bishul akum would be for a Jew to actually place the pot of food onto the fire. The Ashkenazic custom, however, is far more lenient in this. This is following the Psak of the Ramah, who says that even if the food is placed on the fire by a guy, nevertheless, if a Jew in some manner contributed to the fuel of the fire, therefore that would take it out of the problem of bishalachim. So this is a very, very basic difference. So, and again, in a person's own home, this could be very challenging because of the fact that you can't, you know, you have a woman in the house, you say, well, it's all kosher. So what? But there's a problem of bishul, right? There's a problem of bishul even if it's all kosher. So there are ways, this already is a much more complicated discussion, maybe for another time, how people work around this, but this is a problem which exists in people's homes, and the truth of the matter is that even in cooked foods, this issue exists, even in things that we buy in stores, because there is a heter that I believe is pretty commonly relied upon that was put forth by Rabbi Heinemann of the Star K, that since the Ashkenazic tradition holds that all it takes to make food bishul Yisrael, to take it out of the problem, would be if a Jew adds something to the fire, right? We Ashkenazim hold that even if a person would throw a twig into the, you know, in the old times you make a fire from wood, if you throw a twig in, that's already good enough because you contributed. So he instituted that in different technologies and companies, I think even in certain ovens, that they would put a light bulb that yielded heat. And because the light bulb yielded heat, and that light bulb was always there, so the total heat, the total temperature of the fire, the light bulb contributed to, and therefore that would remove the problem of bishalachim. This is a heter that's relied upon in different food processing. Today this is put into practice. That they rely on a bulb burning, but as I say, this eitzah only helps Ashkenazim. Sfardim do not have the luxury of this because the psak of the Mechaber is that the only way to get out of the problem is if a Jew actually places the food on the fire. These are some of the issues of bishalachim. As I say, it's somewhat connected to Parshas Balak, and maybe a further discussion of it will take place in the future.